We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for December 15, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll have energy analysis with Michael Barwinski of Louis Dreyfus Commodities Biofuels in Kansas City, Missouri. In agricultural news, ExxonMobil is making a bid to buy XTO Energy. We'll have this and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will look at U of I research efforts to battle soybean aphids. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City March wheat: 526.5 down 7.5 May, 538.25 down 7.25. At the CME Group, March wheat, 536.75, down 6.75. May, 550, down 6.75. July, 560.25, down 6.5. March corn, 407.5, down 1. May, 418.25, down 1. July, 427.25, down 1.25. December, 438, down 2.5. March oats, 260, up 1.25. May, 268.5, up 1.25. January beans, 10.55, unchanged. March, 10.62, up 0.25. May, 10.66.75, up 0.5. July, 10.71.25, up 1.75. November, 10.22, down 6.25. January soybean meal, 316.80, up 60. January soybean oil, 39.64, up a penny. December live cattle, 82.10, up 105. January feeders, 93.02.5, up 112.5. February lean hogs, 67.42.5, up 155. And February bellies, 91.60, up 250. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Taking a look at the two-state weather forecast, AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser says tonight it will be cloudy with patches of drizzle in Indiana and southern Illinois during the evening hours. Lows ranging from 5 in far northwestern Illinois to 27 in far southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow in western Illinois, mostly sunny. Elsewhere cloudy early, then becoming mostly sunny from west to east. Highs ranging from 8 in far northwestern Illinois to 38 in far southeastern Indiana. The extended two-state highlights: colder air will arrive tonight into tomorrow. Highs on Tuesday ranging from the single digits in far northwestern Illinois to the 30s in the south and east. Low temperatures Tuesday night into Wednesday morning will be in the single digits below zero in far northwestern Illinois and in the single digits above across most of the rest of northern Illinois. Those areas will be colder because of a snow cover holding on from last week. Lows farther south and east will most likely be in the teens. Moderation to more seasonable temperatures is expected later this week, and no significant precipitation is expected this work week.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report and on the web at willag.org. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Dave.
Want to start with the U.S. dollar, which got real perky today and got above its 100-day moving average.
Yeah, you know, we're up about 56.5 cents here right now, or above 77.30 as we speak, and that's a nice rebound in that dollar. We're seeming to see a little bit of confidence coming back into the possibility of the economy recovering just a little bit here. We know it's going to be slow, but and we talked about this morning about the idea of you know, inflation, fighting it with the interest rates, when and what we do. But we do feel that, you know, down the road a little bit, we're going to probably see interest rates go up just a little bit and add a little strength to the dollar.
We're not that far away from an objective that Dan Zwicker and I talked about several weeks ago at 77.47. And if you look above that, you have to go a little ways into, to see the next objective.
You know, and I think that Dan is probably one of the best people I know is using charts and looking at and possibly forecasting where that is, Dave. So, I mean, you know, there's very much possibility in how things go on that. But, you know, we would like to see this dollar stay above 75 here, you know, for the first quarter. Well, all of next year, in fact. We'd like to see a 77 to 80 cent dollar to help strengthen the U.S. economy and keep things growing.
Meanwhile, technically over in the soybean pit, the January contract is the one I'm looking at, had such a promising start. It made new highs on the week, cleared last week's highs, and gave it all back, although I suppose the good news is it tried the downside a bit and didn't find any traction there today.
Well, I think if you remember what we said this morning, just like in the other part is, you know, we're somewhat caught in a trading range here. We have all of the rebalancing of the index funds of the other out there looking at things, number one, keeping a bottom under this. We have the Chinese buying, which come in very strong for the amount they already own, and with the way that South America is looking, feeling that they might hold off without any more purchases now. So basically, between that and the good crush, because the crush margins were so good over a dollar, we actually saw some traders today being net buyers of the Jan-March meal spread, figuring that they wanted to, that would work on the bullish attitude that way. There are some of us that are just a little bit negative at higher prices, and you know, we scalped the top end of the range today for a little bit of money.
Are our crushers still crushing for the oil?
Yes, Dave. I mean, you know, that both the whole package has to add up, but the oil is what's moving strongest here like that. So we did announce 290 metric tons of U.S. beans to China, you know, today also that way. So that's one of the things that helped that. And we're going to have a private estimate of the 210 acres to be released later this week. And they look for soybean acres to be unchanged. So the addition is really going to be coming out of the South American harvest.
Let's turn our attention to corn. What did you see there today?
Not much. We saw a little following of the bean market there along the way. We did see that the funds bought somewhere around 3,000 contracts of corn today. But once again, we're caught in the 384.20 range as far as the March goes.
Did you get any sense about open interest today?
Well, like I said, we've seen the funds continue to be buyers in all of the grains here. We talk about the rebalancing that way. But all in all, I think that the speculative traders have somewhat taken the sidelines here for the holiday trade and wanting to come back and look at the new year.
How's USDA going to handle the amount of corn in the field in the January report?
Boy, that's a good question, Dave. We're not 100% sure, but I think that what we've seen as to what they'd been in a couple weeks ago in the same field, what they were able to get in when it froze up over the weekend here and harvest some of that. There had not been very much harvest loss, even if there had been some snow and stuff along the way. So I look for a very small reduction in what they were looking for that way, because it has the corn has continued to stand very well and very little harvest loss if they're able to get it here in the next week or so.
Let's turn our attention to wheat, which is surprising given the fundamentals.
Yeah, that's an understatement. The world is awash in wheat, and we're still staying in here. At 560 next July wheat, being down 6.5 on the day. It's amazing to us, but there again at this price level, why we're seeing some fund activity coming on in. If we look at how they are going to rebalance that, wheat was a 3.1%. Of the 2009, as far as the fund's going, it looks like it's going to go up to a 4.7. So, we are looking at also added activity in the wheat market by the funds.
So the question then becomes, given all this fund money coming into the marketplace over the last month and money yet to come into the market, what prices do you think are well supported by all of this activity?
Well, like I said, basis the March corn, I'm thinking the 380. There's support basically, and a lot of the traders are going out to the March beans rather than the Jans now, and the technical watchers, they're buyers of beans below 1050 basis the March, Dave.
Federal Reserve is meeting, and tomorrow should have an answer about interest rates. What are we anticipating?
I anticipate zero change on this report, but I think there's going to be lots of consideration and probably lots of rhetoric about the possibility that in the near term after this that we could see a possible increase the next time we discuss this.
And before we let you go, a little talk about basis. Usually about this time of year you would expect it to firm, but it hasn't happened yet. Are we a week behind, a couple of weeks behind? Where are we in your mindset?
We're probably about a month behind, Dave, and I say that generally out of the fact that here it is. It's, the week, we're just a little over a week till Christmas, and we still have a lot of corn in the field. We journeyed north this week in northern Illinois, and we saw over probably 23% in the field here yet as far as the corn goes. So, we're still very pressured at a lot of elevators. They aren't running full blast and don't have room and drying capacity to handle this as fast as some of those guys would like to combine it.
Thank you much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, ExxonMobil Corporation will buy XTO Energy Incorporated for about $30 billion in stock, in a move that thrusts the U.S. energy giant to the forefront of North America's fast-growing natural gas industry. The deal, which is subject to XTO shareholder approval and expected to close in the second quarter, would be Exxon's biggest since it purchased Mobil Corporation in 1999 and the eighth largest ever in the energy and power sector. The deal is valued at $41 billion. U.S. trade officials formally notified the U.S. Congress yesterday of President Barack Obama's intention to negotiate a free trade deal with Vietnam, New Zealand, and five other countries in the Asia-Pacific area. U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk, in a letter to congressional leaders, says, quote, "On behalf of the president, I am pleased to notify Congress that the president intends to enter into negotiations of a regional Asia-Pacific trade agreement known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership." Some southern lawmakers are seeking billions of dollars in emergency aid for farmers after recent natural disaster declarations in at least 20 states. A farm disaster program authorized by Congress last year still is not fully in place. And even if it was, some lawmakers say its design could keep many farmers with losses this year waiting for help until January of 2011. Lawmakers from Mississippi and Arkansas are helping lead a push for at least $2.1 billion in emergency farm aid and hope to gain approval by year's end from a Congress that has been focused on other spending packages and the health care debate. A new Associated Press investigation of confidential contracts detailing Monsanto Company's business practices reveal how the world's biggest seed developer is dealing with competitors, controlling smaller seed companies, and protecting its dominance over the multi-billion dollar market for genetically altered crops. Monsanto's methods are spelled out in a series of confidential commercial licensing agreements obtained by the AP. The contracts, as long as 30 pages, include basic terms for the selling of engineered crops resistant to Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, along with shorter supplementary agreements that address new Monsanto traits or other contract amendments. The AP found access to Monsanto's genes comes at a cost. For example, one contract provision bans independent companies from breeding plants that contain both Monsanto's genes and the genes of any of its competitors unless Monsanto gives prior written permission. Monsanto's business strategies and licensing agreements are being investigated by the U.S. Department of Justice and at least two state attorneys general. The suburban St. Louis agricultural giant says it has done nothing wrong. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Farmers in the Midwest are growing soybeans developed by University of Illinois researchers. As Todd Gleason reports, the new entries tolerate soybean aphids better than the average soybean plant.
The soybean aphid came to the U.S. in the summer of 2000. It's the same year U of I researchers began looking for a variety of soybean resistant to the new pest. Dowling and Jackson were the first two resistant varieties to be identified, says USDA plant pathologist Glenn Hartman.
And hopefully we'll find some more. We've got another 30 or 40 on the shelf that we're kind of wanting to screen through.
Hartman works for USDA and is stationed at the University of Illinois. The nation's soybean germplasm collection is housed on the Urbana-Champaign campus. There are some 18,000 different accessions in the collection. Hartman combed through 4,000 to 5,000 to find the aphid resistance in Dowling and Jackson. He says he knew they were resistant, but that his U of I colleague Brian Deers, a soybean breeder, had to do some crossings and look at the inheritance patterns to figure out whether the resistance was because of a single gene or multiple genes. Fortunately, it comes from a single gene, and that's easier to breed into existing soybean lines. With additional screening, a third soybean resistant to aphids was found, a Japanese variety known as PI200538. Now, Hartman says after the genes from these sources were identified, it was discovered that Jackson and Dowling had genes mapping to the same place on a chromosome, and the PI had a gene mapping to a different place. This means Jackson and Dowling likely have the same resistance gene, and PI200538 has a different gene. That's good for the breeding program. Because Jackson and Dowling originated in the southern United States, they couldn't be grown in the Midwest, well, at least for production purposes. Deers used traditional breeding techniques together with marker-assisted selection to quickly breed the resistance genes into varieties that are already adapted to the Midwest. This year is a milestone year because one of those varieties is being commercially produced. It carries the resistance gene from Dowling. It's the first commercial production of an aphid-resistant variety in the Midwest. The U of I aphid-resistant germplasm and marker technology is licensed to private seed companies who are using it to breed their own varieties. The first aphid-resistant variety developed and released by the University of Illinois is Roundup Ready, and the second is a conventional non-Roundup Ready variety. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with a look at the energy markets is Mike Barwinski of Louis Dreyfus Commodities Biofuels in Kansas City, Missouri. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Want to start with Valero, which is in the ethanol buying business again, yes?
Yes, they bought three more ethanol plants tomorrow, increasing their total production capacity to over 1.1 billion gallons a year.
And at the moment, do you have a sense of how close to capacity they're running?
I believe that they're running at or above capacity at the current time. They definitely have the capital behind them to run in case in a poor margin environment. And I believe margins are still good enough right now that they're running at full steam.
We've been keeping an eye on the technicals, Mike, of ethanol. We run a continuation chart on a weekly basis, and ever since we hit a top of 2.16 4/10, we've been on a decline ever since. Yesterday went under, or last week went under the 100-day moving average, and we continue to decline further this week. What are the margins like at the moment?
Spot margins in December are still very good. They're well above variable cost. I'd say they're close to, 30 to 35 cents above variable cost. Your break even for a typical ethanol plant in the U.S. is around 10 to 11 cents. So plants are still making a good amount of money currently. If you look along the forward curve going on to the last half of 2010, you get closer and closer to break even. So the market has really kind of fixed itself very, very quick on not allowing and not incentivizing any more production to come online in 2010.
Is there going to be a problem in the short term? I seem to remember seeing something about gasoline stocks being pretty high.
Yeah, gasoline stocks are high. That's definitely been one area that's hurting ethanol. You know, ethanol was gaining quite a bit on gasoline for a while there, and it reached a point where you took out a lot of your interest from your gasoline majors buying ethanol at these levels. So, that added with the strength in ethanol just kind of took things down. You've just sort of taken out quite a lot of demand on that side.
Where's the rack price for gasoline sitting in areas where you keep track?
I'd say it's around $2.04 a gallon, I believe. Mm-hmm. So ethanol today, close to the rack, is around 190-191. So it's still profitable to blend ethanol.
What do you look for going forward into 2010?
One is demand. That's the big thing. We still have Texas coming along, going to E10 in mid-January. We have quite a lot of states, Texas being the main one, that has a lot of areas that still have a capacity that it could blend more ethanol. You know, we're still nationally around 8 in the U.S. The other big thing is obviously whether or not the EPA approves higher blends up to E15. If you get that, then obviously the areas where it's profitable right now to blend, they should, increase their blends beyond the 10% limit.
Do you think that the trade was generally encouraged by reading between the lines of the EPA delay decision suggesting that E15 was a possibility?
We have about 25 seconds. Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that was absolutely a positive thing for the trade. I think the worst thing would have been EPA would have had to decide at that moment, and I don't think without further testing they would have allowed it to happen. The fact that they delayed it was actually probably a positive part, because from what it sounded like, the tests are going well and they will approve it. It's not an if, it's a when. So I definitely think that was a positive for ethanol and for ethanol demand. I think the market just doesn't quite know how your end users are going to react to that.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you.
Mike Barwinski of Louis Dreyfus Commodities Biofuels in Kansas City, Missouri.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin calls the Obama administration's plans to buy the Thompson Correctional Center a major step towards closing the detention facility in Guantanamo Bay. He says the next step involves Congress voting to lift the law banning the Cuba detainees from being brought to the U.S. The White House today plans to announce that the federal government will acquire the Northwest Illinois Thompson site as the new home for no more than 100 terrorist suspects. Durbin also says the Thompson prison needs some upgrades. Business owners near the prison say its purchase will be a financial shot in the arm. Among those expressing excitement is Todd Smith, the owner of Bucks Barn Golf Resort. He says the pending sale has prompted him to dust off business expansion plans he shelved years ago. Vermilion County's Board of Health will discuss several alternatives tonight as it looks towards downsizing its health department. Department Administrator Steve Laker says that scenario appears more likely than closing the department, but it still weighs about $600,000 from the state. Some state money has come through recently, but Laker says the county will likely have to borrow money in order to fund the department's depleted revenue stream. A final say in the department's structure will be decided at a December 29th Vermilion County Board meeting. Laker says programs that could be cut include maternal and child health and senior referrals for nursing homes. A special agent with the FBI Springfield office says its investigation into the October fatal shooting of Kawan Carrington in Champaign will focus on civil rights statutes. Marshall Stone says the scope of the investigation into the teen's death could potentially look at areas like excessive use of force and will be different from the state police probe that led to no criminal charges being filed against the officers involved. Stone says the FBI investigation could take several weeks and adds it will take even more time for federal officials with the Department of Justice to deliberate. State Farm Insurance says it thinks it's paying too much in property taxes in its hometown. If the company is right, it could cost local schools and government millions of dollars. The Bloomington-based insurer says the assessed value of its headquarters and another office is $84 million higher than it should be. That's 2% of McLean County's $3.93 billion tax base. State Farm paid about $10.25 million on the properties in 2008. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon out of NASS, we had a crop progress report for corn. And in the state of North Dakota, there's 60% done versus 53% a week ago. So I have particular interest into your thoughts on whether or not you think that that corn will come out.
Well, they've got a chance. It's certainly very, very cold, and it's going to stay very wintry. The good thing is, while there has been a little bit of snow, it hasn't been real heavy. And right now we're not expecting a lot of snowfall in those areas. So I think that they will make some progress. They're going to have to bundle up and stay warm, that's for sure. But at least in terms of any significant weather event that would produce a lot of snow causing some difficulties, don't see it. Just see plenty of cold.
Next week I'll be vacationing down in Florida just in time as the cold air hits, yes?
Yeah, and the rain. It really does look like the southeast U.S. is going to be cool and wet. Not so much Florida, but certainly Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, those Gulf Coast states, looking at an extended period of wet weather that will go into Christmas week. So the southeastern states and some of the eastern sections of the southern plains headed towards more moisture.
And in the eastern Corn Belt, in where WILL, Illinois Public Media, is, we're going to turn colder, aren't we?
We are going to turn colder, and it really is looking very wintry right on into the new year. We're going to see probably another pretty good push of colder air into the nation's midsection early next week. That will keep it all the way through Christmas week. So we're going to head into the last 10 days of this month and into the new year colder than normal.
Let's turn our attention to South America, where in Argentina, the weather is pretty doggone close to ideal.
It is, and I think that's going to continue. The rain is still in the forecast, not excessive, and temperatures averaging near normal. So the best of both worlds, temperatures and precipitation, adding up quite nicely down there.
Brazil's not bad either, although there is a pocket north in the northern parts of Brazil that could use some rain. Are they getting some?
They've got some good chances. I think the chances of those northern areas getting the rain is very good.
And temperatures moderate there as well? Or?
Yeah, as you look at in the southern hemisphere, temperatures so far this growing season have been hovering close to, if not just a hair below normal, and I think that'll continue. The coolest areas will be Brazil. Temperatures, though, not so far off and normal that it will cause any delay, any problems with getting some heat units accumulated.
What do you make of wheat growing areas in Australia?
Well, they've got some chances for rain. Australia is looking at a fairly active weather pattern over the next week to 10 days, so the wheat areas are going to get rain. Will it get everybody? No, but there will be some rainfall in those locations.
Where else are you keeping an eye on?
Well, if we were to stay in the northern hemisphere, we would see that if we were to go over to China, let's say, they're looking at a fairly quiet weather pattern early in the period. But as we get into Christmas week and towards the new year, like what's going to be happening here across the U.S., very wintry.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that's today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to willag.org. This is Dave Dickey.